Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to take a look at one of the most iconic roles by the new captain of Star Trek Discovery, Jason Isaacs, in which he plays Lucius Malfoy for the first time in
Yes.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Yes.
But before we do that, we've got a little bit of behind-the-scenes Discovery news today.
Yeah.
There is an editor for the pilot, according to the IMDb. And that editor is John Dudkowski. I believe it's Dudkowski because his Twitter handle is John the Dude Edits.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'd say that's a good bet that it's Dudkowski then.
Yeah. Either way, he's the dude, right?
Yeah. he's the dude, man.
Yeah. 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 And he has done a number of TV shows in particular. Things for Bad Robot, things for Alex Kurtzman, and such. He's done his big thing, I guess, probably you could say, would be Fringe, which he edited 30 episodes of that show.
And so there's a tie right there. He's worked with Akiva Goldsman before. And
Alex Kurtzman.
And Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah. He also did What About Brian, which was a Bad Robot show. And he did Roadies, which was, the latest Bad Robot show, which is cool. And he edited 3 episodes of Man in the High Castle.
Yeah.
So there's that. So that's pretty cool. I don't know. We definitely should probably check out some more Fringe and see what's up. But
I would say that looking through his filmography, I'm going to focus on looking at his TV stuff more than I am going to be looking at his film stuff, because he was in the editorial department for Turistas, which is a Josh Duhem. I always forget how to do him. Fergie's husband.
Yeah.
And it was released just as the wave of what has come to be known as torture porn was subsiding. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible, terrible movie. If you don't like gruesomeness and you don't like horror, don't watch Turistas. That's my one tip to you.
But yeah, he was just an assistant editor.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
So that's essentially what you do when you're trying to break into the industry.
Of course.
Assistant editors are basically the people who log footage and digitize footage and do, you know, get everything ready for the editor so that the editor can just sit down and cut. Lots of times assistant editors work through the middle of the night because they need to, you know, get on mm-hmm. the equipment when no one else is around. It's a crazy job. It's a crazy job.
Yeah, I'm sure that he probably has some very interesting tales from that. But I think also something that helps him with Discovery is that he does have some credits in visual effects editing. So he's obviously going to be very comfortable with an effects-heavy show.
Yeah, and you look at like things like Fringe and Man in the High Castle, you know, I mean, it makes sense, right? So so it's exciting, you know, more crew members. I mean, as they build up, and you know, I'm always obviously curious about editors because, you know, I like editing and I like editors. They're cool.
They are.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we move on to our feature presentation for
today? Let's move on to Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah. So this is a movie.
It is.
It came out in 2002, I believe. It is the second Harry Potter feature film. It was directed by Chris Columbus. It was written by Steve Kloves, who has written an amazing movie called Wonder Boys, if you haven't seen that.
I have not seen that.
Oh, my God. You would love it.
Okay. I believe... Wait a minute. Wonder Boy... That's not the one I'm thinking of that's got That wasn't the fall. The director who did L.A. Confidential. That's
it is
that one. Okay, because I remember that one. Everybody was expecting a bit, like it sort of came and went pretty quick.
Well, yeah, it was like an adult film. You know, Michael Douglas, you know, stars in it as an English professor or a literature professor or something like that, who wrote like an amazing novel. And he's been working on his follow-up for like a decade. It's like, you know, 1,000 pages long. And everyone just keeps on saying, like, when are you going to release it? And basically he's like too scared to release it because he doesn't know how to follow up, you know. And he's afraid of failure. And, you know, he smokes a lot of pot. And he's got, you know, like a relationships with his editor, played by Robert Downey Jr., and one of his students, played by Katie Holmes, and fellow professor. It's amazing. It was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, I believe. And, you know,
sign me up.
Like that movie comes out. Steve Kloves wrote the script, and I'm like, this is amazing. This is an amazing script. I can't wait to see what this guy writes next. And then he spends like the next 15 years writing nothing but Harry Potter movies. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What the hell?
You know what? Money is green, Mike. I always go back to the line from The Simpsons with Krusty the Clown. They drove a dump truck full of money up to my door. What was I supposed to do? I'm only human.
Yeah. What can you do? So yes, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. You want to give a synopsis of this thing?
Harry Potter's his way through a series of very magical problems with a bunch of guest stars to rival that of a Love Boat episode, until finally he confronts the long dead Lord Voldemort again, like he did at the end of the first movie. But this time Voldemort is a teenage. Oh, okay. I got spoilers. You know, if you haven't seen Chamber of Secrets, I don't think we're going gloves off with this, right? We're not going to be like tiptoeing around anything.
I mean, it's, you know, it's not like we're seeing, what's his name? Ralph Fiennes at the end of this. Voldemort is still like Voldemorting around at this point in time.
Yes,
you know
he is.
Yeah,
he is. And there's a magic book and snakes and wizardy things. And
there's a chamber. It's got some secrets. You know
that's true. And there's a phoenix. And it is the last performance by the original Dumbledore. Because after this, he shuffled off this mortal coil.
Richard Harris, right?
Yeah. And it was Christopher Columbus's last Harry Potter movie. He gets the ball rolling. He sets it up. And it is 2 hours and 40 minutes-ish.
Yeah, it's a really freaking long movie. And it seems even longer than that. I mean, Steven Spielberg, you know, God bless him. His idea for these movies was to take the first three books and mush him into one movie. And, you know, at the time I was like, this doesn't seem like the smart play. And even now it doesn't seem like the smart play because, you know, they need to milk these things for all they're worth. But creatively speaking, I would be down with that because, I mean, the first movie makes this movie look like, you know, a jam-packed, you know, MTV style, you know, cut, you know, overload of information. And this one, compared to any other movie, is the slowest movie you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in favor of putting the first three together, but I would put the first two together because even the impression. I remember all the way back when Potter first came out, I was working in a toy store, so I was in my own little chamber of hell, and we were forced to read the first book. I liked it, so move on to the second book, and the impression I always got from the second book was that the ideas were still forming for her, and the first book is such a smash, amazing success. I think that the second book comes together as sort of a okay, we got to get this done, and I got some ideas, and I'll put them down. And meanwhile, she's thinking about everything that's happening in books 3 through 7. Yeah. You know, like this is, 2 really is just a bridge between 1 and 3. And that's what I think makes this movie a little bit maddening, is that the like it's way too long for a movie where there's no sense of danger for the lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's no point during this film where you feel legitimately concerned that Harry might not make it out of this one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a drag. And so as a result, you would want to get through it, I think, about 40 minutes faster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You could definitely do that. You could do that with most of these movies, I think. There's only a few of them which actually feel like, you know, structured like actual like movies. You know, yeah. Order of the Phoenix comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them are just like, oh, my God, so much exposition. So much like, what's that? Oh, that's a really cool thing. Let me explain to you why it's cool.
Well, you know, it's something that sort of crawls under my skin with this one in particular is the Dursleys are obviously they're supposed to be a nastier version of Owen and Beru from Star Wars. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, that's the brief way of describing them. And in this, they really don't come across as overbearing because, you know, watching it, you know, this time with sort of fresh older eyes, there's nothing to indicate that they're particularly unfair to Harry in the text of the film itself. You're supposed to come in knowing that he's in his room and you know that, you know, his uncle is saying like, stay up in your room. I don't want any nonsense. And then nonsense happens and it costs his uncle, you know, the business deal and everything like that. I'd be angry too. You know, like the uncle and the aunt feel a little bit weirdly justified for disliking Harry, because if you haven't, there's nothing contained within this film to give the context of why they're jerks.
Well, yeah,
jerks.
I mean, they do it. It's so over the top. They're like, you know, we don't want you here, so you're going to stay locked up in your room. And then, you know, they literally lock him in his room and put, you know, bars on the windows after that. You know, that's a bit extreme. But even, you know, like sort of like in the, I mean, it's such over the top dialogue, you know, like we gave you this dude's extra bedroom and, you know, we didn't ask for anything in return. You should be happy. You know, I mean, it's like yeah. so over the top, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's yeah. And then that's just the start. Then it just goes from there. And it
well, even that going. Takes too long. And the thing is, like, I get why they show the flying car. You know, going after the train and everything. It's this zany madcap experience.
It's magical.
It takes so stupidly long to do. Like, it could have been cut. And, you know, I get, okay, the Whomping Willow. Get there faster and do it fast. You know, like, it's one of those things where I think that we're just going to keep coming back to that point. But we do meet Lucius Malfoy fairly early in the film.
Yeah, we do.
What do you think of Isaacs as the bad guy here?
You know, he's good. He's fine. He's good. He performs, you know, the role adequately. And, you know, he does have a presence in there, which I think is lacking in most of the movie. I mean, it's usually the bad guys that have it, you know. And, I mean, I don't know what it is, because you'd think that they'd be the most over the top, but for some reason they're able to handle it. Maybe because they hire the best actors. I mean, Alan Rickman, of course, is amazing in everything that he does, and he totally sells it with sort of like an understated performance throughout most of these movies. And I think Isaacs is sort of in that category. And, you know, whenever he was on screen, I sort of, you know, perked up and was paying attention. And I kept on waiting for him to take off, though, because, you know, when the announcement was made that Isaacs was in, you know, Discovery, you know, obviously everyone was like, oh my God, it's Lucius Malfoy, Captain Lucius Malfoy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I remember seeing him in those movies, you know, and I've seen every single one of these movies. I have. And you know, it was like, which one am I supposed to watch where he's amazing? You know, and like I literally asked that question to a bunch of people, and a bunch of people said, Chamber of Secrets is the one to watch, because even though it may not be the best, he is absolutely crazy, and he's at his craziest in that one. You know, his most sinister, you know, that's his introduction, and that's when, you know, he's crazy. And I'm like, all right, I'm in the mood for some crazy. You know, I can't wait to see some crazy. And then I'm watching it, and I'm like, no, this is just standard. Like, this is the best. This is the best Lucius Malfoy we have in, you know, five movies or however many he's in.
Well, I think that the ending with Dobby is probably what sticks with most people, because he finally gets the evil villain light across the eyes, mm-hmm. and, you know, is going to zap Harry, and, you know, Dobby saves him and everything. Spoilers. Yeah. And so I think that scene sticks with you. I think that there are a couple of good points, like during the Quidditch match when Malfoy is watching them go, and, you know, they do, he successfully convey, like, the red herring of, is Lucius Malfoy up to something? Is he behind right. the Chamber of Secrets? Mm-hmm. I think that's what he successfully conveys, is like he serves as a very successful red herring where you believe that he is behind all of the nastiness.
Yeah. I mean, and he does that well, you know, but for the most part, it's just like cut to reaction shot of him looking sinister in the corner kind of thing. And then he says something rather harsh and you think, ooh, maybe there's more to that guy than that. Whereas, like, I was kind of expecting and hoping for something more Pacino-esque, you know, in his portrayal.
Which era of Pacino is the question? Are you talking Ocean's 13 Pacino?
I'm thinking Any Given Sunday Pacino.
I still haven't seen Any Given Sunday.
Oh, my God. We should have watched that instead. That was from the writer of Star Trek Nemesis, and it's a masterpiece.
Well, then let's go. We'll put that on the docket. But, okay, right. So Any Given Sunday Pacino, is that Heat Pacino?
Sunday Pacino is Al Pacino with like a line of dialogue where he picks a random word in that line to just yell at the top of his lungs.
So he Walkens it up a little bit.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. much more intense than that. Yeah.
Well, all right. You're selling me on it.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay, so basically everybody talks up Malfoy in this film, and you're expecting, you know, Al Pacino to show up and, you know, yell at everybody.
It's like that. And, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, as far as Harry Potter movies are concerned, maybe this is as Pacino as it gets or something. I don't know, because these movies are so monotonous and they're so boring. And I know that a lot of people are going to be like, what's wrong with you? And, you know, I mean, bring it. Okay. Tell me why I'm wrong. You know, I can't. Magic is just ridiculous. I cannot get behind magic. It's stupid. Okay.
Really? Okay.
Yes,
Jedi.
It's stupid.
Jedi?
Yeah.
You got a problem with Jedi?
I honestly, the least interesting part of Star Wars for me are the freaking Jedi.
Now you're clinically insane with that statement.
Okay.
But what I will say is that, okay, first I have to ask a question. Have you read the Harry Potter books?
You do not have to ask that question.
Okay. I definitely think that as a whole, these movies work better if you've read those books. They're like companion pieces.
Yes.
Okay.
Which does not
mean that I'm saying, like, and therefore they are good. I'm saying that they are very much tailor-made for the fans. I don't think that there's anything particularly accessible to non-fans about these movies. So my reaction to them in terms of, I'll kick Chamber of Secrets every day of the week for the rest of my life if I want to, but with the rest of them, I always view them as, well, I read the books and they fit together. And to speak to sort of like how narrowly focused they can be toward the fan base is, I have one daughter who has read all of the Harry Potter books. I have one daughter who has zero interest in reading them. Both of them have been watching the movies. And the one who hasn't read the books, she gets up and she just like walks off halfway. She's like, I got nothing to do. I'm out. And the one who has read the books is sitting there like, well, I get why they cut this, but I like how they bridged across there. And so it really is. I have my own little scientific data here for, you know, I have a control Like, I can see how a fan reacts to it versus somebody who is not a fan of the books.
Yeah, and I can see that. And, like, you know, I can understand where your one daughter is coming from, because they're looking at it, you know, analytically in terms of, you know, like, how would you adapt a screenplay? How would you adapt a movie for a screenplay? Yes. And I think that that is a fascinating thing, and I can't help but do that anytime I watch a movie, you know, that's based on a book that I've read. And that's a fascinating thing, which can keep you going through a whole movie. But, you know, like, there's so many times that people have told me, like, you really have to read the book to fully appreciate the movie. And my response to that is, that means it's a bad movie, okay? I should not have to read a book in order to understand or appreciate what's going on in this movie, which is an adaptation of the book.
As a rule, I agree with you, but there's one shining exception to everything, and that's 2001, where they both work as independent works, but they were developed together, and so experiencing both the book and the movie are incredible compliments to each other.
And that's fine. If it's a compliment, okay, you know, like, but then I better be getting as much out of seeing the movie in relation to the book as I am the other way around.
Would say that, yes. Okay, 2001, that is the actual case. Yes.
And there are, you know, very, very rare examples of that. And I think that that's kind of an interesting idea. There's certainly, you know, movies which are told from, you know, alternate perspectives, you know, based on other materials and everything like that, and that's kind of like cool stuff to play around with, but that's not really what's going on here. And, you know, it's more of a case of, like, you would have liked that thing if you would have known the backstory for it, and that is ridiculous. I mean, that's not a good thing. I mean, we're on a Star Trek podcast. How many times have, you know, you shown something to a friend of yours or something which you think is funny because you've seen all 729 episodes, but they've only seen one and they have no idea what it... I mean, it doesn't... You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm totally plugging in with you. And that's the thing. That's kind of the difficult thing, I think, talking about Harry Potter movies, is I think that there's a very... I think because it's such a younger franchise compared to Star Trek, compared to Star Wars, compared to other franchises out there, that I think that it casts into relief... Like, there's an outsider's perspective that we have that we don't necessarily have with the other franchises that have been around longer. And mm-hmm. I think that as a result, the Harry Potter franchise can be a good teaching tool to diehard fans across the board, as to, you know, when I say to my wife, let's watch a Star Trek movie, and she looks at me and she says, you're out of your mind if you think I'm going to sit down and watch that for 2 hours. Normally, I'm like, well, what is wrong with you? But then I look at this sort of like Harry Potter petri dish I have with my kids, and I'm like, okay, I understand now. I get it.
Yeah.
So Harry Potter can bring families together, is what I'm saying.
I guess it can. It also can tear them apart, I think, in some instances, because, you know, you got one daughter walking out of the room because of boredom while the other one is you know.
No, so. They're siblings. They do that to each other all the, you know, I got nothing to do with this, and they walk out on each other. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's... I know that there's a lot of people out there who are just like, you know, Harry Potter, it's an amazing mythology, it's a big thing, whatever. I can respect that, but I can also disagree with it, you know?
Sure.
And I have seen all of these things. You know, I haven't read all of the books, but I have seen all of the movies, and there are some which are good, none which I've felt compelled to ever watch again. This is the first time I've ever watched a Harry Potter movie for a second time. But
yeah,
I did like this movie when it first came out. I think mainly because I liked Dobby the elf. This time Dobby not cute enough to sustain my interest for 2 hours and 40 minutes. So yeah, you know, I don't know. Harry Potter, it's a thing. Jason Isaacs, you know, perfectly serviceable in this movie. I mean, this franchise does cast, you know, some extremely good actors. I mean, I think every like esteemed British actor, you know, who has ever been in a movie is in this franchise, right?
I mean, I really think that this is the one that's sort of like, well, you're too young to have been in the old Bond movies, so be in a Harry Potter one.
Oh, they don't really describe it. It's crazy how, I mean, like, you at some point you're like, do they run out? How big is that island or whatever, you know?
Well, never mind the fact that you could play 6 degrees of Downton Abbey like crazy with this. Because, you know, you got the...
Or anything, you know? I mean,
that's true. Man, Gosford, you could work all the Man, yeah, well, I mean, once Kenneth Branagh comes in, mm-hmm. and you got Richard Oldman. Harris, for Pete's sake. That's a deep well to go to.
Yeah, Gary Oldman. The thing you always want to get back to in that is Rod Steiger, because apparently he's the guy. it's actually been like scientifically proven or whatever that Rod Steiger is the most connected. It's not Kevin Bacon. So once you get to Rod Steiger, you're golden.
If you get back to Rod Steiger, you have to go through January Man. You have to go through January Man, because he gives the greatest off-the-cuff, insane monologue in the history of film in that movie. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't seen it, no.
My friend and I, for years after we watched the movie, we could call each other up and quote this. And I mean, it's like you watch it and it's this thing that comes out of left field and you're like, what? What just happened? What was there a director on set telling him what to do? Because it doesn't feel like it. Pretty great scene.
Yeah. The one that I always think of just because it's so random is The Player. He's in one shot of The Player, you know, as is everyone. But for him, he's at like a party and he's looking at like a fishbowl, like an aquarium. And he's just like looking at it like it's the most fascinating thing. Like he's trying to figure out how it works, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a random shot of him like looking at an aquarium with like a some cheese and crackers in his hands. It cracks me up every time I see it, but you know.
So I guess the point is watch Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and then go watch Rod Steiger movies.
I guess that's the point. Or maybe the point is that we should have picked a different Jason Isaacs movie. You know, I mean, I think maybe The Patriot, you know.
You know what? Bring it on. Fine. We'll put that in the queue. Fine. Let's bring it on. I've had fun kicking this movie. I'll kick that movie too. I got no problem with that.
I mean, I'm no fan of The Patriot really at all. I mean, I think it's kind of ridiculous, but... you know, I mean, I thought that, you know, Chamber of Secrets was decent too. So, you know, what do I know? But I'd be willing to give The Patriot another shot, you know.
Maybe now that I'm a little bit older, I'll be easier on The Patriot because I'll save it for when we cover it. I'll tell the story again of why I had such a bad theater experience with the Patriot. And that may have completely colored my entire experience with it.
I can tell you about how they accidentally misframed the prince ever so slightly, so we had to adjust the framing. There was a note in the can about how we had to adjust the framing based on the opening Columbia Pictures logo in order to make
That's
sure
insane.
There weren't any boom mics in the top of the frame. Actually,
That's insane.
I guess I don't need to tell that story anymore because I literally just told it right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
These things happen, you know?
Yeah. I guess.
Super 35. It's you know.
It's an unforgiving format.
It's actually a very forgiving format, which is why
and
people
scratch
use
what
it,
I said.
But people, Absolutely. You know, sometimes mess it up. So there you go.
It happens.
There you go. All right. Well, any final thoughts on Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets?
Please don't hate me for not liking it.
You can hate me for not liking it. I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, whatever. It's a movie. It's one which I did not particularly like. I liked it when I first saw it, and I think Jason Isaacs is good in it, but it's really freaking boring. It is really freaking boring, you know?
Agreed.
So, watch one of the other Harry Potters instead. Or don't. I don't care. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Jason Isaacs and Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets today, but that's not all we're talking about this week on Trek FM, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
All right, I'll tell you what. You know, I have never, ever, ever worn a costume or cosplayed or anything like that. Now the challenge, the gauntlet has been out there. We're going to have to put together a Mugatu costume.
Mugatu costume.
We got to.
To the journey!
Make him taller. Give him some salt and pepper gray hair.
Yeah.
Make those shoulders broader.
Computer, put a tattoo over his left eye. Oh my god, look what I just did!
I made a chakotay.
Warp 5.
Are you an outside entity that is watching you deal as the bad archer with the good archer? And Scott just looks at me and turns around and goes, oh god, will someone come here and get Gary a script?
Meta Trex.
But these Romulans are still walking around in those nasty pointy shoulder tunics that they wear. I mean, what's up with that?
Doesn't seem like they shed as much of their identity as the Klingons
did. Yeah,
not
shedding as much of their identity.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much for helping us out, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at trekfm or on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we'll come right up. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, where can't they find me, Mike? I'm co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matt Rushing, Star Wars podcast over on the Nerd Party Network. I'm co-hosting over on the Nerd Party Network another show with you called Great Shot Kid, which is basically this for Star Wars creators. And I'm co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, which is a freeform bit of insanity every week.
And you can find me hosting the previously mentioned Great Shot Kid over on thenerdparty.com. You can find me on talkfilmsociety.com doing Soderbergh 2828. And you can find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, doing Commentary Track Stars. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. So we will be back next week to look at the new Brian Fuller TV show, American Gods. More magic, I guess, probably, right?
It guaranteed.
Mm.